Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you. Chase McCabe has this hour off as he is filling in for Jared Stillman this later this afternoon from 2 to 6 alongside the GM, Floyd Reese. So Chase getting a little bit of a breather this morning before a long day, joining Darren McFarland and Willie Donick from 10 to 12, as he normally does on Darren, Donick, and Chase, and then co-hosting Jared and the GM starting at 2 o'clock this afternoon. This hour is going to be a special hour as we walk down that great memory lane of May 22nd, 2017. 3 years ago today, the Nashville Predators claiming their first ever Western Conference title in Game 6 against the Anaheim Ducks. We obviously have Game 6 remastered coming up at noon. It's an oral history of that night and that playoff run from the members who lived it. It's a feature that we've never aired before. We have aired the replay of Game 6 between the Preds and Ducks many times before, but never like this. So coming up at noon, it's Game 6 remastered, and then 2 o'clock, Chase, Floyd, and myself for a little bit will be kind of having the after show of reacting to not only what we just heard, but also the 2017 playoff run. And then 6 o'clock tonight, game night on our Facebook Live. I'll be joined by Harry Zolnerchuk. Should be a lot of fun, as Harry Z recalls a lot of different memories from that playoff run as well. But without further ado, I bring in Darren McFarland down on the southeast side of town and Willie on the east side of town, joining me here on the Rundown this morning. Guys, how we doing this morning?
Good, Ryan.
Doing well.
Friday, good, right?
All
Friday
well on
morning.
The east side. We got a little sprinklage here, a little steady rain, but looking good over here on the east side. Glad to be with all of you guys today. And it's good to have Chase McCabe take a little breather here. Load management, Darren, very important. These days, we don't want to overwork the right-hander here. The guy logs a lot of hours, So it's good to pull back a little bit on this day.
Load management is never a bad thing. Yeah, it's raining here in Smyrna, too, by the way. I guess it's going to be one of those rainy Fridays, but that's okay. We'll keep some sunshine in people's hearts today. We'll try, at least.
Well, there is a lot of sunshine on May 22nd, 2017, both during the day and at night when the Predators won that Game 6 against the Anaheim Ducks. It was a beautiful day in this city. And, you know, we're walking down memory lane of that game, and we'll get into some of the details and, you know, some of the stories from us being on the road with the team throughout that entire playoff run. We'll get to those details here in a little bit. But just looking big picture, guys, where would you rank that night in terms of sports nights in this city? Is it number one? Is it top two, top three? Where would you guys rank that night, May 22nd, 2017?
Well, I'll start it. I really, off the top of my head, can't think of anything that would blow it away. So for me, and I might be a little more emotionally tied to it because I was there right from the very, very start. So it's probably number one for me, just because of what was at stake there. And if we're just talking about terms of not a team playing anywhere, but a team playing in Nashville.
Yes.
I think you could really make a good, strong argument that it is number one.
I don't know what would be bigger. I mean, you're talking about something that happened in this city. What could be bigger? I mean,
well, one of the most memorable plays in NFL history happened in this city, but they didn't raise a banner when the Music City
it's
Miracle
the first
happened.
Round of the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, yeah, that was big, but it was the first round. I mean, they played. That was the divisional round, right? Or that was the wild
that was
card
wild
round.
Card.
That was a wild card round. I mean, you know, obviously, if the Titans had played an AFC Championship game here, I mean, that would be complete. But they've never had anything past the furthest round they've ever had is a divisional round here. And
right.
It's happened twice, and that's it, in 20,
so I
22
think that's
years. So, yeah.
That would we agree that the Music City Miracle would be number one for the Titans? You think about it in terms of the venue, right? If we're talking about in Nashville, well, where are the big events held in Nashville. You have the arena. So I think the Predators Western Conference final would eclipse anything else that's happened in that building. NCAA tournament, first round games, second round games, SEC tournaments. I'm trying to think of anything else that's happened in there. The stadium, I think the Music City Miracle would be it. Memorial Gym, you know, nothing in terms of a postseason. There's been a lot of memorable games, for sure, but nothing with the stakes of a Western Conference championship. You know, baseball, I guess you could say the first time, you know, Vanderbilt went to the College World Series, that would be pretty big on that level, but probably not the same as the NHL level.
I mean, it's just, we're talking about
when they won the city.
We're talking about
at Hawkins Field, it would be winning the regional, the super regional, and going to Omaha. So it's still not the same thing.
No. Honestly, the only way to get anywhere, I mean, yes, the Music City Miracle, for that day, that weekend, it consumed this city. So, yes. So that has to be there. I mean, that's the only thing to me. Seems like anything that feels even close to get to where you're talking about, it would have to be what I've been harping on for years, what the Titans need to do, and that is build a new stadium, a stadium that fits today's times with a retractable roof. And if we were talking about a Super Bowl or a national championship game, a Final Four, a college football national championship game, something huge like that, like some event that takes over the city. I mean, I guess the draft has to be thrown in there, right? I mean,
sure.
Even though it wasn't a sporting event per se, it was a draft, but that consumed the city. I don't know if that's what you're talking about. If you're looking for something that consumed the city, took over the city, like the day that you're describing, the Music City Miracle, that day, that weekend, consumed the city. The draft, NFL draft, consumed the city. And, you know, what we're talking about, consumed the city. Anything else, it's just not there. To get there, you'd have to have the Titans hosting an AFC championship game and punching their ticket into a Super Bowl. That hasn't happened. Or you have to get these events that I've talked about that's not going to happen at Nissan Stadium. So until we host a Super Bowl in this city or host a Final Four or a national championship game for college football, I mean, this is it. This is what it's going to – there's only one more thing that would fit this bill, and I've already said it, the AFC championship game hosted by the Titans, and they win and they go to the Super Bowl. Other than that, to me, it's going to be what we're talking about today.
Yeah, and where I'm going with that question is that it is the most memorable night in Nashville sports history because they raised a banner that night, the first ever time they went to the Stanley Cup Final, and it's a night where a lot of us have a photographic memory and can recall a lot of different things about that day, that night, that game, and we're going to be doing that for years to come. Even if the Nashville Predators go on another playoff run to advance to the Stanley Cup Final, even win it, there's something special about the fact that that was the first time they had even gotten past round two, let alone made it all the way to the Stanley Cup Final. They did it as the 8th seed in the Western Conference, and there was just a dose of magic that night and that entire playoff run. And Darren, you bring up the fact that the draft took over this city. That Nashville Predators team, really from the start of the Chicago series, once they won Game 2, that team took over this city for 2 months. And it's a two-month period of time that I know a lot of us wish that we could just relive.
Yeah, and you know what? You brought up the first part. You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if – I mean, Willie and I remember – and I don't know. I guess you were going to games too. I mean, we've talked about the atmosphere, the early years at then Adelphia Coliseum. I mean, I don't know if they ever get that back. I don't know if we ever sit because that was the first. I don't know if they could ever recreate that. I don't know. Get to an AFC championship game that you're hosting. Maybe we'd find out. Have it here. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to it's a little bit easier with the Predators because the fan base is so rabid and so crazy. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, that truly was special. I don't know if you can recreate, even if down the road that happens again. I mean, that was just something that happened organically. It was natural. And, yes, it took over this city. The fan base grew like gremlins at midnight. It's like everybody got fed, and it multiplied. And it was huge by the end of what we're talking about, which was 3 years ago today. And obviously it would continue on. But, you know, that series, that night, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you ever recreate that. I mean, because of what you said, it's the first. You don't. Sometimes you don't ever get to recreate the first. Sometimes they're the first for a reason. And it may be close, but I don't know. Maybe those moments, you know, we'll never be able to relive, which is why, you know, we're sitting here talking about them today. I mean, that's what makes them special.
Well, this is something that we, I think, comprehended at the time, but it was the first time we'd experienced it. As we're comparing it to other great events that we've seen in our city that we've had a chance to take part in, what's unique about a hockey run like that is the build. Right, it's a process. It takes 2 months. So step by step, it gets bigger and bigger. Like, Darren, your reference to the Gremlins, right? The audience grows. People that weren't interested during the season are interested on a different level. People that were somewhat interested during the season are now rapidly interested. And then on down the road. Football can't do that. Football, it's a three-week run. It's a one-month run if you go all the way. And you may not even have all the games in your building. Whereas you know that if you go four rounds best of seven, there's going to be a lot of chapters in your city and there's going to be plenty of chapters outside your city. But the buildup was what was really, really special. And this was, I think it went to a whole new level in the Stanley Cup final, as we know. But, you know, that night, it wasn't just that night. It was the buildup to that night.
Yep.
1,000%. And last night, Willie, you guys on Fox Sports Tennessee replayed the Preds-Blues Game 6, where the Preds advanced to their first-ever conference final. And that day, that Sunday afternoon, felt like it was the best sporting event, or at least the best Predators game of all time, the biggest moment in Preds history. But you don't think of it that way now because of what happened after that in the third round against the Anaheim Ducks, and especially Game 6 against the Ducks on May 22nd, 2017. Speaking of, we've got Game 6 Remastered coming up at noon. Coming up next, we're going to hear a little bit of a snippet from Game 6 Remastered. And also, where were we when Colton Sisson scored that goal, that go-ahead goal in the third period with 6 minutes to go that ended up being a hat-trick goal? We will get to that all coming up next here on The Rundown. I'm Ryan Porth alongside Willie Donick and Darren McFarland. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. I'm Ryan Porth alongside Willie Donick and Darren McFarland this morning as we are walking down memory lane and getting you set for Game 6 Remastered that is coming up at noon here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And before we get into the details of the Colton Sisson's go-ahead goal, I do want to play a little bit of a snippet of what you're going to hear on Game 6 Remastered this afternoon. With the Preds up 2-1 early in the third period, this is a snippet of what you will hear when they're chronologically going through this game early in the third period when Colton Sisson's made it 3-1.
Thompson goes right side, trying to cut Wagner, cutting in front. Now a try by Lindholm down in front, and the rebound kicked away to Forsberg. Predators coming back. 4-on-3, but they want to change up on D. So now it's tough. Tor bust up there on the side.
Yes.
And the score. Pots is over. Got it back out in front. And the Predators take a 3-1 lead at 3 minutes of the third.
That was all Philip Forsberg down the wing. He dumped it in. He went and got it. Came around the net, and they just kept throwing it around the net. But they had three chances at it, and they never covered it up, and he finally got one through his legs. Offer got it. I think Offer was the next
guy. Did you ever hear over 17,000 people exhale simultaneously?
Good job by Phillip taking the body.
Then Auberg.
Auberg.
Sissons could have been deflecting.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Sissons came over on right shot, got through everybody.
Wow. Predators. 3 goals on 9 shots. They've been outshot 31-9, and they lead the game 3-1.
Darren McFarland was Colton Sissons. I always tell the fans, Colton, watch the players. That'll tell you whose goal it is. Just watch the player after a play. If you're not sure, they'll usually tell you their body language. So did you know that – did you think that the second goal was yours? Did you have – I mean, how did that play out in your mind when they said it was Aberg's?
You know what? I don't even remember them announcing that it was Ponce's goal, to be honest. But I was pretty sure it was. I was pretty sure that it was mine. It was a mad scramble in front, and me and Pontus were hacking and whacking, and I got a pretty good swipe on it. Just slid under, and yeah, I remember. I watched the highlight actually recently, and the celebration was pretty great.
That was a snippet of what you're going to hear. That's the concept you're going to hear coming up at noon here on ESPN 102.5 The Game with Game 6 Remastered. And I bring in Willie Donick and Darren McFarland. And guys, it was interesting that night where that goal happened. The Preds go up 3-1. You hear Pete Weber on the call saying the shots are 31-9, which illustrates just how slanted the ice was all night long in Anaheim's favor. And the Predators were very opportunistic against Jonathan Bernier. But you know, the goal was originally Pontus Auberg's goal. And when Colton Sissons scored that go-ahead goal with 6 minutes to go, we did not know at the time that it was technically his third goal of the game and that he had scored a hat trick. We didn't know until the TV timeout after that when they switched the second goal or the third goal from Auberg to Sissons. So, and that's when all the hats went flying out on the ice. So really cool to hear Colton Sissons recall that goal and hear Pete and Brent call the goal as it happened.
Yeah, there was a lot to try to decipher, as there are in a lot of goals, particularly goals in the playoffs. It seems like there's a lot of traffic, and it's not easy to beat the goalie on a clean shot at that stage. But I think the biggest thing, other than setting the stage, the obvious, setting the stage for Colton Sisson's third goal and a hat trick at the time that he did, was just how important that goal was, because, as Pete pointed out, 31-9, the Predators got off to a roaring start, as people would probably remember. They came out of the gates flying. They scored too quick. And it was after that that there seemed to be a little relaxation, and that's when Anaheim began to dominate the 5-on-5 play. So, but I didn't even realize it was 31-9. I knew it was very lopsided, but 31-9? Are you kidding? And then they score that goal to go up 3-1, and you're hoping that turns the tables and puts Nashville back in the driver's seat, but it really wasn't that way, as we're going to find out, right? As Anaheim went right back to work and again began chipping away at the lead.
Well, yeah, the Ducks tied the game at 3-3, and our quarantine question of the day on Twitter at 102.5 The Game, if you want to chime in. The quarantine question of the day is, where were you when Colton Sissons scored his goal? And, you know, guys, I kind of want to get your perspective of how you viewed and watched that goal. Darren, were you in Barrel House, or were you out in the lower bowl watching from the lower bowl?
I was in the lower bowl.
Okay.
I don't remember if I was up in my seats or if I was standing up. I switch around a lot. I just, whatever's working is where I am. And I don't remember if I was sitting in my seats or if I was standing up. Basically, they're in the area, you know, where you can walk in the inside concourse. So I don't really remember. I guess I don't have that photographic memory. A lot of that stuff was a blur.
It was.
Because I move around. I move around, as you know, a lot during a game. And so, you know, if I definitively remember, I would say it, but I'm just I'm kind of take a shot in the dark, and I don't remember exactly where I was. I mean, it's one thing, you know, when we're on the road, we have to sit in a certain place, and so you know you're just sitting there and you can't move. At home, I like to move around, just for whatever reason. It's just, it's comforting for me. I don't like just whatever spot is working. And so, you know, that was a hairy moment. Like Willie was saying, you know, that you think everything is in control. I mean, the Predators, that was the thing about the run. I mean, they would finish you off, and that goal 3 minutes into the third period, you're thinking it's 3-1. Yeah, Anaheim's had all the shots, but they're at home, and this is supposed to just, you know, coast to the finish line, and that's what it is. But the next 5 minutes would not go the Predators' way. Forget the shots. It would then be the goals. And the next thing you know, we're not even at the halfway point of the third period, and the game is tied at 3.
Right.
So my guess is at that point, after the two goals, I started doing a lot of shuffling and moving around.
Well, Willie, you would have been downstairs getting ready for the post game show, the local post game show on Fox Sports Tennessee, right?
Yeah, I actually have a pretty good story on this. By the way, I was looking at the stats. The final shots on goal for the night, 41-18 for the Ducks. And remember, the last two shots for the Predators were empty net goals. So that's, you know, that's 16 on the goaltender. So when here's how it worked for me. I would sit in the in our regular broadcast area where we would normally do our telecast for Fox Sports Tennessee. That area is open because there's only one telecast. That's NBC Sports, who's in the broadcast area right next to us. So they're calling the game. Our crew is sitting up there all in a row for the first couple of periods. And then in the third period, we all have to make our way down at some point to get in our position to where we're going to be when the post-game show starts. Because the idea was, as soon as the game ends, you know, there's not very much time. You want people to then flip over and turn to our coverage, which, by the way, our crew at Fox Sports Tennessee, we won an Emmy for our coverage. So we're really proud of that. It's a pretty cool trophy. People don't know if you won the Emmy for that or for, like, best daytime soap opera performance. So it looks exactly the same as one of those things. So I'm sitting there when Anaheim ties the game, Cam Fowler's goal at 8:52. I know at some point I've got to get from the press box down into the locker room area to do the post game interviews. That was my spot. So of course you don't want to miss anything when you're going down, and I'm afraid, of course, as soon as you walk into the stairwell that something's going to happen. So I put the game on my phone. And so I make my way down the stairs from the 300 level down to the event level. And the game is going on for part of that, right? You pick a TV timeout, you go. I'm thinking to myself the whole way, what if I hear the roar of the crowd, or what if I hear dead silence? I'm going to miss something. So I'm watching the game. But you know there's a delay on your phone. It's probably, what, 30 to 45 seconds at least, yep, behind real time. So I'm going down the stairs one by one. My mind is racing. Do they have enough in the tank? Is there any way that they can hold off the Ducks? The Ducks are storming everything. It's not just that they're getting shots. They're getting quality shots. Pekka is doing everything he can just to keep his team even. But the one thing that was in my mind at the time was Bernier, Jonathan Bernier. He had struggled early in the game. He hadn't played the whole postseason until the game before. I thought to myself, they might be able to get one on him. So now I get down to the Zamboni level, and I pass by the tunnel that leads the Zamboni out to the ice in the end zone there. There's a monitor there. Now I can watch the game in real time. I still have to hustle over to my spot. So now I go through the through that area into the area that leads to the locker rooms. And so you pass by the media area. You guys know where that is. The fans probably don't. But I'm arcing around the curve of the rink and looking at every monitor I can see because I don't want to miss anything. So I peek into the media room where a lot of the media, the overflow, is watching the game. And I'm like, I can't be here. I'm too nervous. I got to just keep going. So I keep going around. And then I get to the locker room area. It's dead silent down there. The game is on, but you can't hear the announcers. You can barely hear where the crowd, but there's not a lot of noise. And so I just get, it's like something out of a movie. I get there right in front of a monitor, which is in real time. So now I'm watching everything along with everybody else. And the only other guy that's in the hallway, and we're dead silent, there's no conversation or anything, is Jerry Helper. And then, boom, it happens. Colton Sisson scores the goal. We looked at each other. We had the widest eyes. We didn't say a word. We just looked at each other with our eyes wide open, our jaws dropping. And all of a sudden, it sounds like a freight train is going on right above us because you hear the roar of the crowd and the goal horn go off as it unfolds from there. It was really something because it happened right when I arrived down in front of the locker room.
That's a cool story. That's a cool behind-the-scenes story. I know up in Section 304, I blacked out for a few seconds when that puck went in the net, and I think I threw up in my mouth a little bit because it was such like a jolt of OMG. And as we'll hear on the call on the other side from
Cause,
Pete.
Because there had to be a lot of worry, right, Ryan? I mean, you and Darren, you can appreciate it. There had to be a lot of worry that, hey, that, you know, it took a lot for them to get up 3-1. But do they have anything left, right? You don't have Johansson. You don't have – who's going to make a play? Who do they have that could make a play right now? They're struggling to get any offense at all. But all of a sudden, they made a play.
Well, the memory I had, too, of right before Sisson's scoring, I was up in 304 with my brother, and I looked at him at one point and said, I do not want to get on that plane back to Anaheim tomorrow. The way this is going, the way the Ducks are outplaying the Preds in this game, if the Preds have to go out to Anaheim for a game 7, I do not feel good about it, even though they had won 2 games in Anaheim in that series. But the Preds, you know, get that big moment from Colton Sissons, and we'll hear that highlight on the other side and continue this conversation on the other side of the rundown. I'm Ryan Porth alongside Willie Donick and Darren McFarland. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
12 seconds remaining in the Anaheim power play. This game tied at 3. On the wall, take it away, Yarncroke. Yarncroke out to center, drops for Sissons. Power play about over for the Ducks. Here now is Yarncroke, across for Sissons.
And he scores!
Score!
Oh, my goodness.
The score! And the Predators take a 4-3 lead as they were killing off the remainder of a penalty.
Welcome back into the rundown. Ryan Porth alongside Willie Donick and Darren McFarland as we walk down memory lane of Game 6 between the Preds and Ducks on May 22nd, 2017. Game 6 remastered coming up at noon. Guys, it's funny to hear that call and hear Brent Peterson's just spontaneous reaction of, oh my goodness. I think that's how over 17,000 people inside Bridgestone Arena in that moment felt when that puck hit the back of the net when Colton Sisson scored.
Yeah, the first thing that I thought of when that goal was scored, and you got to look at it, was what a high skill play. Cali Yarncroke's pass is a saucer pass that kind of threads through the defenders, and Colton Sisson makes an incredible play to even get a shot away, let alone a pinpoint shot like that. You know, I mean, it's like an in-between hop. He skips it. You know, as it hits the ice, he one-times it, and it wasn't like it landed smoothly as a saucer pass. He had to sort of play it as it bounced. Just an incredible shot that I don't know you could make, you know, 10 times out of 100 like that. It was truly lightning in a bottle. And as you heard Pete say, the Predators were in a tie game. They had no momentum at the time. Anaheim has scored twice to tie it, and they're on the power play. Roman Josi was called for delay of game at 11:57 of the third. And so you talk about trouble with a capital T. That was it. And so as soon as that thing expires and they score, what an amazing turnaround.
I just remember going, yes, I can get a Frosty tomorrow. Awesome. Sweet.
Well, Brent admitted on the air that he was going to give his Frosty to Tammy.
Yep, that's right. Which, you know, that's when you know it's special. When Brent's giving away Frosties, which he never does, usually he's hoarding the Frosties, you know it's special. We're going to have Philip Forsberg on the show today leading up to Game 6 Remastered. And obviously he would basically cap off the net. There would be a couple of empty netters, but it was his empty netter, you know, with just over 2 minutes to go to finish it off. And we're going to talk to him about what that moment is like, because that's when it's true. You know, Colton Sisson scored with 6 minutes to go. It's not over. I mean, that's a long – with a team that's desperate and fighting for their playoff lives, right. 6 minutes with a one-goal lead is no big deal. We saw Colton Sisson's goal early in the third period give him a two-goal lead. In a matter of 5 minutes, you blink an eye, you go to the concession stand, you go to the bathroom, you come back to your seat, it's tied 3-3. Mm-hmm. So there was no comfort at all. It was great, but it was like, okay, there's still 6 minutes to go. This is still going to be very hairy, and as Willie said earlier, I mean, they got outshot 41-18 in the game. I mean, they were outshot in every period. 12-4 in the first period. Just think about that. They're outshot 12-4, Predators lead 2-0. Anaheim outshot them 13-4 in the second period. Predators lead 2-1 through 40 minutes, and then they're outshot 16-10 in the third. But it wasn't until that empty netter with just over 2 minutes to go that everybody could truly exhale and truly let loose. And we're gonna ask him, I'm going to ask him, what was that feeling like? Because at that point, you know it's truly over. It's over. You're going to the Stanley Cup Final. In the stands, for us, media, fans, what have you, we can all put our guards down, right? We can let our guard down and relax and celebrate. What's it like for those final 2 minutes as a player? Do they let their guard down? They relax? Are they in party mode? Or are they still thinking in their back of their mind, now be careful? So I just want to get his perspective of what that's like as a player at this point. This is at the biggest stage, the biggest point, biggest stage, biggest moment of your career. You're 2 minutes away from going to the Stanley Cup Final, and all the hockey eyeballs in the world are on you. You know, what's that like? So we'll get Philip Forsberg's reaction to that today in the 11 o'clock hour.
Yeah, I love that. You know, one last point that I want to make on the Sisson's goal is, you know, I went frame by frame this morning rewatching that goal. And if you stop it right when Callie Yarncroke is looking at Sisson's to pass the puck, all five Ducks players are looking at Yarncroke in the Ducks defensive zone. All five of them and Bernier are squarely looking at Yarncroke. And there's Sisson's back door where, you know, probably the most underrated part of that goal is Yarncroke's pass through all the traffic over to Sisson's. And, yeah. You know, Willie, you described it well. The puck was not flat on the ice when Sisson's shot that puck. And, you know, for that puck to go in and, you know, I think another thing that helped that goal to actually happen was the fact that it was at the end of a Ducks power play, and they only had one defenseman on the ice. If you look at the players on the ice for the Ducks in that moment, it was Kessler, Getzlaff, Perry, Silverberg, four forwards, plus Cam Fowler, who Sisson's had knocked down. Right before he was wide open for that shot. So, you know,
great point.
All the little things have to go your way for a long playoff run, and even for one magical night like that one in Game 6.
Those are the great details that make these games so memorable, right? Because you do dig down to the last little nook, last little thing that you notice in retrospect. And I hadn't thought about that, Brian, until you pointed it out. And this is how almost everybody does it now. Almost nobody has two defensemen on the ice anymore for a power play unit. But it was a little more common even 3 years ago. But the Ducks were going for it, and they had the four forwards on the ice. The other part of it is when you transition from special teams back to five on five, you don't have your structure, right? You don't have your normal alignment. That's one of the things. Not only do you have a forward trying to play D, but the five guys out there aren't used to defensive zone coverage. And so in transition, I'm sure they had trouble picking up who's supposed to go where, who's got Sisson's, you know. And in that moment, there was a breakdown, and Sisson's found that open spot. And still, they had to make, I don't want to say a miraculous play, but it's certainly a high-skill play to pull off the goal there. It was truly, like I said before, lightning in a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
That goal was 3 seconds after the power play had expired, Roman Josi's delay game. delay game of puck over the glass.
He probably had just barely gotten back on the ice, you know, with the door opening to get back in the play.
Well, Subban didn't get an assist on that goal, but Subban forced the turnover of Ryan Kesler that then let Yarncroke and Sissons come back the other way. So all the different details of that goal, fun to go back and watch. And Ryan Kesler, thought it was fitting that he was the one that that turned that puck over that led to Yarncroke and Sissons going the other way. And then, you know, Darren, you mentioned the Forsberg empty net goal. And from that point on, in the arena, outside the arena, with everybody watching on either, you know, 5th or at Walk of Fame Park, it was one of the biggest parties that this city has ever thrown, and there was no planning for it. Like, you don't plan for a party like that because it's just so spontaneous. And you used the word organic earlier in the show. You know, it's not like it was set for a week that at 10 o'clock on Monday, May 22nd, 2017, we're going to have this huge party all over town. But that's what it turned into. And, you know, there were so many people that had to go. It's a Monday. So many people had to go to work the next day. And a lot of them had voices that were very hoarse and maybe some headaches around Nashville that next morning.
Well, I mean, how many times do we ever go to a party where the invite says the party is for 3 hours, but it could last all night? don't know, but it could be a three-hour party. It could be an all-night party. I mean, there's no way, you know, we don't have parties like that. And didn't know if after this game it was going to be talking about a game 7. So you never know. And so you're right. It's something you can't plan for. It's not like you said you went into that night on May 22nd and said, okay, tonight is going to be the biggest party in this city's history, so let's plan for it. You can't do that. And so it's just something that happened naturally, and boy, a party it turned into, that's for sure. It was, like I said, I don't know if you can ever recreate something like that, because that just is something special that I feel like we are going to, I will talk about it for the rest of my life, just because I know, even, and I hope there's a lot more of these that we can talk about, but I'll always remember the first, and 2017 will always be the first. That'll never be taken away from them. And I think we'll always tell the story that we're telling here today.
Absolutely. Game 6 remastered coming up at noon here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. As detailed of a breakdown of that game and an oral history with Pete Weber narrating Game 6 remastered at noon. Be sure to tune in to that. Coming up next, we're going to wrap up the rundown by sharing some stories from the road, the ones that we can tell from the road during that 2-month trip, 2-month magic carpet ride of the Nashville Predators making it all the way to the Stanley Cup Final. The three of us were on the road with the team. We'll share some stories coming up next year on the rundown. Ryan Porth alongside Willie Donick and Darren McFarland here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Draw pulled back to the end board. They're going to let it run down without any more. And there we go, folks. Sit down if you need. The Nashville Predators are going to the Stanley Cup Final.
That was the final call from Pete Weber on the Fifth Third Bank Nashville Predators Radio Network 3 years ago tonight as the Preds clinched their first ever Western Conference title to move on to the Stanley Cup Final to face Pittsburgh back there in 2017. Ryan Porth alongside Willie Donick and Darren McFarland here on the rundown. And guys, the three of us were on the road that entire spring, Chicago, St. Louis, Anaheim, Pittsburgh. And, you know, just thinking of, you know, outside of the games themselves and how much fun those 2 months were. You know, we didn't experience baseball in Chicago because it was a sweep. I think we had lined up the possibility of going to Wrigley if there was a game 5, but there wasn't a game 5. But, you know, we went to Busch Stadium in St. Louis, caught an Angels game, you know, out in Anaheim, and a couple Pirates games in Pittsburgh, and a U2 concert as well. I don't know if you guys remember the dancing guy on the field.
Oh,
during the U2 concert. But
glad I wasn't on when he was on.
that was certainly a sight to behold.
Where is that guy now, 3 years later? I'd like to know. Is he okay, that guy?
We should have found him for Game 6 Remastered.
Yes. A Grateful Dead reunion tour? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that guy. Probably playing
hacky sack.
He
had a good time
right
that night,
now,
though.
Somewhere.
Yes,
eating
he
grilled
did.
Cheese sandwiches and eat playing hacky sack would be my guess.
Absolutely. Well, you know, another one of the more fun stories that we like to tell from that entire 2 month period of time is in Anaheim the night before game two. So to set the scene a little bit, in Anaheim, game two, it's on, I believe, a Sunday. So it's an earlier start than normal. There's no morning skate the next day. So we go to the Angels-Tigers game at Angel Stadium, and I think Mike Trout almost hit us with a home run ball.
Do you remember who was making his season debut that day?
I don't.
For the Tigers,
I do not remember.
I remember this is in what, late May? So mid to late May, making his season debut for the Tigers.
Season debut.
Yep.
So this would be a Tigers team.
We'll get
that
traded
fallen back from the consistent runs they had in the earlier part of the decade. Remember, they went to, what, three straight ALCSs and a couple World Series?
J.D. Martinez.
He would get traded shortly after.
Wow.
That was his season debut.
Wow.
You know why I know that? Because
I
drafted
don't remember him.
Him
as a Tiger that much.
And he sat on my roster the whole time. Since March, sitting on my roster, I drafted him, waiting for him to return, and he returned that night. That was his first game back. In fact, I think he homered. Go back and look. I think he homered. Maybe twice.
Well, I think he did, yeah.
Maybe twice.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to look at that. But I distinctly remember the Trout home run, because that's exciting. We actually saw Mike Trout homer in Dallas last year, right? In Arlington. I believe that's right.
I wouldn't remember because I wasn't.
Look, Mike Minor threw the complete
Mike
game.
Mike Minor threw a gem.
Yeah. Well, after that Angels game, we went to that darts bar, and I love how Chris Mason put it when he was on with you guys last week about how there were a couple of cheese balls that came in with their own darts as – all of us in the national media, we somehow ended up at this darts bar, and we were having a grand old time. And then here comes, you know, this darts team with their own darts to this, you know, this hole in the wall bar in Anaheim. And I always remember kind of the look on our faces of who are these guys and why are they here?
They were there to win darts. Well, that's
what they if were you doing. Remember, we. We didn't. We had no idea where we were going. We just wanted to find a place to go hang out after the game because we were all together. We were having a good time.
It was
and we
shady.
Found this place. It was well. I don't know if it was shady. It was off the beaten path.
Yeah.
Like we tried it. We peeked in a couple places and were like, no, that's not where we want to go. So we found this place and we're like, okay, it may not be the greatest, may not be exactly what we want, but it's good enough. It had a lot of people in there. It had the dart boards, and we went in there. So we started throwing darts, and then here come the specialists, right? They brought their own darts. That was the first thing. You're like, who brings their own darts on a just a random night like this? But we're like, we got to play these guys. We got to see what we're up against. But the other part I remember, of course, we must have put $20 in the jukebox in one of those CD playing things, and did not hear a single song. Over the course of a couple hours, and I kept asking the bartender, "Does this thing work?" Or, I mean, it took my money, right? Are they going to play my songs? And they're like, "I don't know, Hopefully, you know." Like the guy knew something, right? He kind of knew. He just didn't want to be the bad guy and have to tell
me,
"Dude, you just lost $20. There's no way your songs aren't playing."
Mm-hmm. Well, the 2017 playoff road trip was also where the inside jokes of the potatoes and milkshakes. Were born, and we don't have enough time to get into how those stories were born. And I don't think our listeners really care about how those stories were born. Only Pete Weber does. But Darren McFarland and Willie Donick, thank you so much for joining me here on the rundown here this morning. Fun to go down memory lane, and we look forward to Game 6 Remastered coming up at noon.
I can't wait. I hope everybody else can't wait. I've heard a segment, and if 2 hours sounds like that segment, this is going to be a must listen to starting at noon.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys. And coming up next, Darren and Willie will be sticking around alongside Chase McCabe. It's Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.